crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal. We're not coming to you from Israel today, but rather from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College at Edstone, England, just north of Stratford-upon-Avon. Here I'm going to be working from here for the next couple of weeks, and so the next two programs for you will be recorded from here. Nevertheless, our eyes are still on Jerusalem, on Israel, on the Middle East to report to you what is most prophetically significant in current news, and also to update you on the archaeological discoveries and the latest in the archaeological industry as well from there. And today we're going to stick with archaeology. I have three stories that I would like to bring to you that, of course, I will post in the notes of the show below so that you can read up on these yourself if you so desire. And then after that, in the second part of today's show, we are going to finally get to some feedback and go through some statistics over the past 3 months of producing this show. It's hard to believe that it has been so long. This is, in fact, the 13th show of Watch Jerusalem. Well, the first story I want to talk about was released just yesterday, or a couple of days ago, actually. This is from Hebrew University, and they say that they've discovered the 12th Dead Sea Scrolls Cave. And this is what Hebrew University archaeologist Dr. Oren Gutfeld said, quote, "This is one of the most exciting archaeological discoveries and the most important in the last 60 years in the caves of Qumran." So what he's talking about here is not necessarily it's the most important discovery of the past 60 years in archaeology, but rather this area around Qumran. Qumran's a 2,000-year-old settlement that might have belonged to the Essene people. We're not exactly sure, but that's the location of where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found over 60 years ago. The first Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Of course, they are. We've done a program. The very first program that we produced talked about back three months ago. Talked about how that Israel was going to have a search for more of these scrolls, more of these parchments that might contain scripture, scriptures from the Bible, books of the Bible, just like the Dead Sea Scrolls found 60 years ago do, and really did went a long way to confirming the accuracy of the Bible, confirming the accuracy or the ancientness, the historicity of the Holy Scriptures. And then they said that they're going to make a search for more of these caves and more of these scrolls where they could be, because of the dry climate of the Dead Sea area, that they would be well preserved and possibly be able to be read. And there was a pressing need to start searching for these because of, one, Israel and its relationship, the Jewish relationship with this territory was, or the state of Israel, was under threat by the United Nations, by the world, claiming that Israel doesn't really have a claim to that land, or the Jews don't have a claim to that land. And then the other reason is because there are a lot of covert excavations that take place in Israel to find antiquities such as these scrolls. A tiny little parchment of a 2,000-year-old Dead Sea scroll can fetch up to $1 million on the black market. A tiny little fragment with a couple of words on it. So these are very rare, obviously, but very expensive documents if they are to get into the hand of not real archaeologists. They just dig, these treasure hunters, and they are active across Israel trying to find antiquities. There are parts of the police force in combination with the Antiquities Authority to try and stop these thieves from conducting illegal excavations to find such remains. And even 2 weeks ago, I was just watching a video of a bust of police catching people that were tunneling to try in a Byzantine structure to try and find antiquities to sell in the black market. And they caught them in the act. So this is something that happens quite a lot. And we really want to make sure that archaeological discoveries in Israel are made by the proper authorities for those that will hand them over and have to hand them over to the state of Israel, because they belong to the state of Israel. So it can be trumpeted out to people around the world about Israel's history. Anyhow, let's talk about this story, which they believe that they've found the 12th Dead Sea Scroll cave. And I'm just going to quote from the press release that Hebrew University gave or released just last week. They said, excavations in a cave on the cliffs west of Qumran near the northwestern shore of the Dead Sea prove that Dead Sea Scrolls from the Second Temple period were hidden in the cave and were looted by Bedouins in the middle of the last century. With the discovery of this cave, scholars now suggest that it should be numbered as Cave 12. So there's been 11 caves obviously before this where different scrolls were found, pots were found with remains of scrolls. And while they didn't really find any written scrolls in this Cave 12, what they did find, as we'll cover here, is evidence that there were, at some point, Dead Sea Scrolls here that were then stolen illegally and then sold on the black market. It says here, the surprising discovery representing a milestone in Dead Sea Scroll research was made by Dr. Oren Gutfield and Hayad Avadia from Hebrew University of Jerusalem's Institute of Archaeology with the collaboration of Dr. Randall Price and students from Liberty University in Virginia, United States. So they've been working there for a number of years. And it says here, the excavation was supported by the civil administration of Judea and Samaria, by the Israel Nature and Parks Authority, and the Israeli Antiquities Authority, and as part of the new, quote, Operation Scroll, that's what they're calling it, launched at the Israeli Antiquities Authority by its Director General, Mr. Israel Hassan, to undertake systematic surveys and to excavate the caves in the Judean desert. Now let's get to the cave here. It says, excavation of the cave revealed that at one time it contained Dead Sea Scrolls. Numerous storage jars and lids from the Second Temple period were found hidden in niches along the walls of the cave and deep inside a long tunnel at its rear. The jars were all broken and their contents removed. And the discovery towards the end of the excavation of a pair of iron pickaxe heads from the 1950s that was stored in the tunnel for later use proves that the cave was looted. So this cave was looted, and they can tell by the pickaxe and the other remains that they found in there that it was looted about 50 years ago. Then it continues. Well, this is a quote now from Dr. Gutfield himself. This is what he said. Although at the end of the day no scroll was found, and instead we only found a piece of parchment rolled up in a jug that was being processed for writing. So they did find some writing, some parchment, but it was before it was written on. The findings indicate, going back to the quote, beyond any doubt that the cave contained scrolls that were stolen. The finding includes the jars in which the scrolls and their covering were hidden, a leather strap for binding the scroll, a cloth that wrapped the scrolls, tendons and pieces of skin connecting the fragments, and more. So basically, everything existed in these caves, but the actual scroll themselves, because the scrolls were looted. Now, what this means, not necessarily it's exciting because they found a cave here that had scrolls in it at some point. It shows that there might be more Dead Sea Scroll caves out there. And who knows what's going to be written on the scrolls that they find. And they are continuing this Operation Scroll into the future until they make a very good survey of the different caves in the Judean desert. There's obviously many of these caves. This is the same region that David, as he was trying to escape from Saul 3,000 years ago, hid, and hid quite well for a number of years in these caves. And then these caves were also used through numerous periods as the Jews had to escape the Babylonians and then the Romans. They came and hid in these caves in the Judean desert, and they probably took with them, or they did take with them, some of these, the writings, the scrolls the books of the Bible and other writings, of course. So the fact that there is an extra cave that we didn't know about, and they've been doing this search here for just a few months, and they found a cave, shows that there's likely going to be more, and possibly ones with actual scrolls in them that the Bedouins didn't find, that didn't make it to the black market. Now, this is a very exciting story, and something that we will definitely keep track of and report to you about if they find more. Now, the next story I'd like to talk about, it relates to this excavation at Masada that is set to continue. Masada, of course, is a very important excavation site. It's one of the most popular tourist destinations, actually, in Israel today. Some of you likely have been there. This is a place where a scene, really, of Jewish resistance, as this was the final place or where the Jews met their doom during the Roman takeover of Judea at the end of the Second Temple period. I should just say that the Second Temple period is the period in which Zerubbabel and then Herod's temple was in existence. So we're going generally from about 515 that BC all the way through to about 70 AD or 70 CE. And this excavation that's taken place over a number of years at Masada has yielded a lot of discoveries. This was a palace that belonged to King Herod, the famous King Herod, the Herod the Builder, that had a part to play in constructing the temple and a lot of buildings inside Jerusalem. Herod, of course, was known as the great builder, the biggest builder since King Solomon himself, and there's a lot of remains in Jerusalem from his time. Well, they say that in the winter months, when Jerusalem got too cold, that he might have traveled to this hilltop area in the desert to escape the cool winters. Now, they are going to go back there and start excavating. I think they actually started this past week on February 5th, and they're going to see what else they can discover at this important site. I'm just going to read an article about this now from Ilan Ben-Zion. He writes for the Times of Israel. Ilan Ben-Zion, he is their archaeology author for the Times of Israel, archaeology writer. He's on the archaeological beat, and he's quite good and quite fair and balanced, I believe, in the way that he writes. So I'll leave a link to this article as well in the show notes. He writes, Masada is a rugged crag in the Judean desert overlooking the Dead Sea. So we're about 40 or 50 kilometers south of Qumran. That's where Masada is, on the western side of the Dead Sea. He says here, Masada is a rugged crag in the Judean desert overlooking the Dead Sea. Herod, the first century BCE king of Judea, perhaps best known for the building Jerusalem's Temple Mount complex, constructed a fortress and a palace on the mountain. The elaborate waterworks channeling seasonal rainfall allowed the royal redoubt, to have a more plentiful supply than Jerusalem, according to ancient accounts. So you go there today and it's literally in the middle of the desert, and you probably won't see any vegetation on top of Masada. And yet, the water system that Herod created ensured that every drop of water that lands on that little, on that hill, the big hill, is collected through a series of aqueducts, tunnels, and cisterns. Then he continues here. Ilan Ben-Zion says, during the Jewish revolt against Rome a century later, from 66 to 70 CE, Jewish rebels entrenched themselves at Masada. Nearly 4 years after the fall of Jerusalem, a Roman army besieged the last holdouts. According to Josephus Flavius, the sole historical source for the battle, the Jewish rebels committed mass suicide before Roman troops stormed the battlements. And archaeologists, he says, have challenged that historical account, nevertheless. But you can see it, and that's the most impressive sight when you go to Masada, is that on the eastern side of this rocky, rugged crag that just rises up out of the desert, you have a massive hill. And this is an artificial hill. It's a hill or a ramp that's been created by the Romans and renegade slave Jews that just got conquered from Jerusalem. They would have to come and construct this mountain to reach up to the mountain of Masada so that the city walls could be, or the town's walls, the fortress walls, could be breached. And that's what they did. And then when they breached those walls, what did they find? They found everybody dead. Well, almost everybody dead. So there hasn't been excavations here for decades. The first of these started back in 1963 and went through 1965 under Yigal Yadin, a really prominent name in archaeology of Israel. And we are going to see what they discover, and maybe they'll discover more from the accounts of that Roman siege at Masada. So that's another story and something to watch. They're generally pretty good at releasing their findings fast, so we won't have to wait too long before we can see what they discover at Masada this season. And again, this is something that I'd like to bring to your attention once they release those findings. The final story I have here relates to an excavation that is just being underway, getting underway real soon, and this relates to the excavation of Kiryath-Jearim. Kiryath-Jearim is also pronounced Kiryath-Jearim. It's transliterated that way, and it's known by that name to most people that read the Bible in English. And the most famous part of this story, or the history in the Bible relating to Kiryath-Jearim, is it was the place that the ark rested for about two decades after it came from the Philistines. Now, this happened during Eli's time as the judge over Israel, right before you get into the monarchy of Saul. And they took the ark into battle, thinking that that was going to help them in their fight against the Philistines. But no, it didn't. It actually really frustrated God, because they were treating the ark as other nations, the pagan nations, would have treated their own gods. And God didn't like that. He was a God over all the earth, not a certain patch of earth. And yet that's how the Israelites were treating the Ark of the Covenant up at the time. Anyway, they obviously lost that battle, and the Ark went to different Philistine cities, and we have the history recorded of how it was put place before a temple of Dagon in one of the Philistine cities, and that Dagon fell down numerous times before the Ark. And then the people of the city contracted some type of infection or disease, so they passed it on to the next Philistine city, and it goes from Philistine city to Philistine city. And finally, after they realize that they are being cursed, the Philistines are, because of their holding of the Ark of the Covenant, they release it. And two cows take it. Two milk cows take it, and they bring it to Kiryath-Jearim, or Kiryath-Jearim. Now, this place hasn't really been studied much at all, this archaeological site, which I find quite amazing. And it does show how many sites are left in Israel to excavate. Yes, Israel gets more archaeological attention pretty much than anywhere else in the world, as far as the number of excavations that take place, if not the most. It's close. And yet, here we've got a site that's prominently mentioned in the Bible, a spot where even the Ark of the Covenant was for two decades, and yet hasn't been excavated. Well, that is about to change. Obviously, we don't expect them to find the Ark of the Covenant there, because David brought it into Jerusalem from this location. Nevertheless, it would be interesting to go there and see what they can find that from that period. The Bible says that this should be a place, a city, during the time of King David and before. So let's see what the archaeologists find. This is another article here entitled "Archaeologists to Break Ground at Biblical Site Where Ark of Covenant Stood." And again, I'll leave this in the notes for you to read, but I'll just quote from it now. It says, "One of the few remaining unstudied major biblical sites where, according to the Bible, the Ark of the Covenant was kept for two decades will be excavated by archaeologists this summer for the first time." So it hasn't happened yet. This coming summer, it's going to happen, though. "Organizers hope the anticipated study of Kiryath-Jearim will shed light on the site's significance during the Iron Age, the period associated with the biblical account of King David. Kiryat Yearim is mentioned over a dozen times. Sorry, or Kiryat Yearim, I'll just anglicize it, is mentioned over a dozen times in the Bible as a Judahite town situated near Jerusalem during the period of the Judges and King David, or the Iron Age. During the Iron Age is when the Bible says that this town was in use. Now, the people that are going to be excavating this is Tel Aviv University's prominent professor, Yisrael Finkelstein. He's going to be working alongside Christophe Nicole from a college inside France. And this is what Finkelstein told the Times of Israel. He said, "The place is important for several reasons. It is a large central site in the Jerusalem hills that hasn't been studied until now. It may be the only key site in Judah that hasn't undergone a systematic archaeological excavation." Now that's exciting. It's kind of the last remaining site that hasn't been touched. A lot of archaeological sites have been touched, but they're so big that you can't excavate the whole thing. Like even excavations like Gezer, it's been going on for a number of years. Lots has been discovered. I'm just going to throw out a guess here, 5% of the site has been excavated. So when you hear about archaeological sites or digs taking place in these cities and they haven't found this or that yet, well, understand that they're probably digging a percentile of, or one percentage point of the entire tell, because it's expensive to dig. It takes time to excavate these sites. And yet this one hasn't even been touched. And it forms a really important connection point, really, into David's reign. And that's probably why Yisrael Finkelstein is so interested in digging this site. Now, I think it's exciting when Yisrael Finkelstein, he's obviously the archaeologist that's been most vocal against the kingdoms of David and Solomon, the United Monarchy, as the Bible discusses, that glorious empire. And here we have a city that was in existence during that time. So he's going to excavate and see what he finds. See what he finds there. And we'll see what he does discover. I'll just continue from this article again that I'll mention. It says here, according to the book of Samuel, the Ark of the Covenant was stored at Kiryat Yearim for 20 years after it was returned to the Israelites by the Philistines, who had captured it in a battle and to their dismay were smitten with disease. The text, or the Bible, says that the Ark was stored in the house of Abinadab in the hill and tended by the priest Eleazar before King David conveyed it to Jerusalem. So it was in a stored in the house of Abinadab here, and it was tended to by a priest. So that's exciting to see what they can find, and maybe they'll find that house where the Ark of the Covenant was. Then the article continues, whether or not the story of the Ark being kept at Kiryat Yearim can be taken as historical fact. Finkelstein argues that the fact it's mentioned in that context suggests that the town was of great significance, and it's reasonable to assume that there was some type of temple there, some type of religious importance, some type of religious building that was important, some type of shrine. Then the article continues, the major questions concerning the manner of worship conducted at Kiryat Yearim are difficult to resolve through excavating the site. And Finkelstein said, you need a lot of luck for archaeology to provide answers to such complex questions. As far as how they worshipped, I mean, you go to the Bible and you can read how they worshipped. But since the Jews were forbidden to have idols and a lot of devices helping them to worship, it's hard to uncover exactly how everything happened through archaeology. All that you can hope to do is find some artifacts that were used in the process. Then this article concludes, nonetheless, Finkelstein said he hopes the dig will yield vital information about the history of the site's inhabitation, its rise and fall, from which scholars may be able to reflect on the larger picture of life in the Iron Age Judah, including nearby Jerusalem. And I think, again, this is very important. The very fact that this site hasn't been touched, and now they're going to dig there, and Israel Finkelstein's going to dig there, And we are just primed right now with the discoveries of what we've had in Jerusalem, what we've had in Kir Bet Kayathar, other cities that are bringing to light the period of David and Solomon and even earlier. To have one that has been untouched and yet they're going in there right now or in the summer to start digging again. I mean, this sounds like it's fitting. The time is right for another great discovery from King David's time. We don't know. As he said, and it's true, there is a bit of luck that is involved when you're digging just such a small portion of an ancient city. How do you know that you're going to hit the important things in that city? There is, you do try and find where the city gate was mainly, and that's probably either looking to Jerusalem at this time. So that's where you might want to dig. But really, you're kind of stabbing in the dark of where the significant thing is inside or on this large mound or tell. But I think the time is right for more discoveries to take place in Jerusalem regarding this period. So we'll see if that happens at Kirjath Jearim. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to finally get to some of your feedback and letters.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive. Thank you for listening.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.FM.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem for the second part of the show today. We're just going to go through some feedback and also update you on a few stats from the program. We do thank you for listening. We do have a faithful audience out there. I can track, at least through SoundCloud, who of you listening and where you come from. And it goes all over the earth. We've got fans from many different countries, and you'll see that from our feedback. There's been about 6,000 plays over the past 3 months. Only 200 of those are from Israel, so we want really our Israeli audience to ensure that they can share the program as much as possible. Of course, we don't know. That's just they're just the stats on SoundCloud. This one that we're producing right now, this is our 13th program. The most popular program so far was The Hunt for More Dead Sea Scrolls, and that garnered about 800 listens. But there, some of the shows that we've produced so far in the first 3 months, they are quite timeless. Sometimes I do have a news event at the beginning that might have lost some of its significance at this time, but wait for that second part of the show. I generally go into some more history, or history of the Bible and archaeological discoveries that have been made in the past 100 years in Israel. So it's worthwhile going back and listening to them. Now I'll just go through some of the programs and some of the feedback that we received. This first one here was from the Philippines, and it was in response to Jeremiah's prophecy of Babylon's demise and the return of the Jews. I think this was about 2 weeks ago. And they write, amazing history recorded right there in the Bible. Thank you for your efforts to help us see the history. We'll keep listening to Watch Jerusalem and recommend this to my friends. So thank you very much from the Philippines. We also have another bit of feedback responding to that program. This comes from one of our faithful listeners down in Suriname. He writes, hello, sir. Wanted to express thank you for how you brought out the importance of Jerusalem in connection with King David ruling Israel. The Watch Jerusalem program gave me a clear understanding of how Jerusalem, true religion, and us is all externally connected. Thank you very much through that lecture. So thank you very much again for your feedback from Suriname. This one is to the program King David Establishes Jerusalem as Israel's Capital. This is from a listener in Texas. And this is when I was discussing that I was going to give Melanie Phillips a tour of Jerusalem, King David's city. He writes, how fortunate Melanie Phillips was that you noticed her. That's one way of looking at it, I guess. And he said, thank you for your kind invitation to visit the Ophel. What an excellent program and presentation. And again, that's from a listener in Texas. And I would say, if you are in Jerusalem, if you travel to Jerusalem, I would be more than happy to give you a tour as well. It doesn't matter to me if you're an important journalist or not. I will be happy to give you a tour. So please take me up on that offer. There's plenty of ways to contact me. You can do that by even just emailing letters at watchjerusalem.co.il, and that will reach me if you want a tour of the Ophel or the Palace of David area. Then the next one responds to the program Israeli Excavation Reveals King Solomon Era Copper Smelting Facility. This is from Canada, and they write, love the Watch Jerusalem show and the series on the other cities. Would love to see these archaeological sites on a map. Keep up the great work. So she's referring to the series by archaeologist Christopher Reams on the Bible's buried cities. He's done 8 of those, and we are going to put them up on the Watch Jerusalem site with a map telling you exactly where they are. And you can click on the map, and then these articles will come up for your viewing pleasure. So that is in the works. Thank you for that from Canada. The next one is responding to Happy Hanukkah. President Obama fires final shot at Israel. This one comes from Australia. Thanks for another wonderfully informative program. So glad someone strives to expose the treachery of this recent man and his deep hatred for Israel. The articles have been great, fitting into the jigsaw of history and the Bible as the pieces all come together. Keep up the great efforts, as it is appreciated by so many. So thank you again for listening from Australia. The next program here was King David and the Philistines, and this comes from Canada. Very informative program. I find it a great way to get to know Israel, along with some history and archaeology from all the way across the ocean in Canada. Thanks. So yes, that's what we're trying to do. I'm glad that our audience is finding it a way to keep their focus on Israel, on Jerusalem, and to get to know or more deeply appreciate the history and archaeology from Israel. This next one comes from the United States in response to history Iran's leaders would like to forget, from Arkansas. It says, quote, another great program. The time goes quickly while listening and leaves you wanting to hear more. Thank you. I love this program. Well, I don't know, an hour-long program, that is amazing if it goes quickly for you, and I'm happy that it does, but if you want to hear more, you're just going to have to go back and listen to them again, or you can stay tuned, and every Sunday, we are going to produce a new one for you. This next one comes from Canada as well, and it was from, or in response to the program, The Battle Over the Bible in Archaeology. And I really feel like this program might be worth, if you're interested, to go back and listen to it, because it would make, if you've listened to some of the following programs, I really do reference what happened early on in the at least 30 years ago in the archaeological world here in Israel, and how that has affected the viewpoint of the archaeologists that are digging today, and it's affected how they interpret their discoveries. So I would go back and listen to this program. Nevertheless, this is what a listener from Canada wrote in. He said, "Thank you very much for this program. It was very educational for me. I did not realize the extent to which the leftist Israeli archaeologists and historians have damaged the faith of the Israeli people in believing in the events and personalities of the very book that serves as the foundation of their belief system and identity, to the point where even archaeological proof of these biblical details is met with a shoulder shrug. Well, we just can't know for sure." He's right. He's right. There's so many in Israel that read about the discoveries of the Dead Sea Scrolls, that read about something that David said, well, it looks like David built, or read about even something so obvious as a seal impression that's got King Hezekiah's name on it, and say, well, we don't really know for sure if it was forged. We don't really know if that's real. But really, the archaeologists and a lot of the academics in Israel have themselves to blame for that, because they've written and they've trumpeted out for a long time that the Bible, the very foundation, as he writes here, of Jewish identity, isn't accurate in its details. And this program is to show that it is. It is very accurate. Then he continues again from Canada. "This is very sad and underscores the purpose of this website and program." I feel like he should join our staff here because he seems like he understands what we're doing. "The purpose of this website and program to help the Jewish people behold their God through the proof of archaeology." Yes, that's what we're trying to do. "It's also exciting to consider what remains to be uncovered and discovered. The greatest finds and proof of the Bible lie yet ahead, and indeed, I believe they do." Now, just a couple more here. This is one that related to the program on the Dead Sea Scrolls. It says, "Wonderful. Great to have this detailed information intelligently commented on straight from Jerusalem. This is especially appreciated as it gives lots of detail plus in-depth analysis on real Bible understanding rather than faddish theory, which don't stand up to scientific methodology. I am extremely happy as a graduate of Ambassador College that you are publishing again out of Jerusalem. More grease to your elbows, as we used to say. Big wishes for your future work in Big J. Keep up the watch." So that's somebody that was a graduate of Ambassador College. Ambassador College were the ones that excavated with Hebrew University at the southern wall of the Temple Mount on the Big Dig, and then for 10 years in the late 60s and 70s, and then excavated in the City of David with Dr. Yigal Shiloh in the 80s. And then Herbert W. Armstrong College has continued that work in Jerusalem, helping partner with Hebrew University to dig up treasure, real treasure. It might not be gold, some of it is, but real historical treasures from Jerusalem. That's what we've got a part in. And we're going to reveal those to you as much as we can. So thank you for that bit of feedback. Now, this final one comes from the United States. It says, "Thank you so much. I've been looking for this on iTunes for a while." And she wrote in before asking if she can find the program on iTunes, and you can. There is a link on the SoundCloud page, profile page of Watch Jerusalem on the right that will take you directly to where you can download the podcast from iTunes if you'd like to do it this way or that way. Then she writes, "I absolutely love this program. I am so thankful to have one site to go to for the latest news on Jerusalem. Thank you so very much for your hard work and dedication to making this a truly wonderful and exciting site to visit every day. I've always loved archaeology, and now to be able to read about how the Bible is confirmed by all the archaeological evidence in and around that area is truly stunning. I wish I could come and visit." Well, come and visit. If you want to come to Jerusalem, if you're in Jerusalem, if you're in Israel, look me up. See if you're available. If the time's right, I will give you a tour of those sites and hopefully make that history, the history of the Jewish and Israelite peoples, come alive. The history that's recorded in the Bible, come alive. Well, that's all the feedback we have time for today. If you would like to send us some feedback, you can do that by simply replying to a post or leaving a comment at watchjerusalem.co.il or at SoundCloud, or you can send us an email, and the address would be letters@watchjerusalem.co.il, and that will reach us. Or you can actually send a message on Facebook or Twitter as well. Twitter, just our handle is @watch_Jerusalem. Make sure you put the underscore in there, and that will reach us as well. You've been listening to Brent Nuchtigal, and this is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.